Hello everyone, welcome to the new edition of the Stats for Lefties podcast. In this second season, I'm going to be focusing on interviews with interesting and insightful individuals. And today we have a very exciting guest, Matzard Cousin, former aide to Jeremy Corbyn when he was leader and strident campaigner for better regulation of the gambling industry. And we talked about whether Labour can be reclaimed for the left, what the left can do outside the Labour Party, why Matt decided to leave the party, and more. The first half of our conversation, focusing on the Labour Party and specific questions, is available here for free. If you want to hear the full conversation, we're a bit more relaxed and it's a little bit more fun, you can sign up to patreon.com/leftystats from £2 a month, and you get the extra content there. So, with that out of the way, let's hear from Matt. I was thinking to start with, you recently left the Labour Party after being obviously very heavily involved with it for a long time. Why don't you tell our listeners about the reasoning behind that? Why do you feel it was the right time to leave?
Well, I think that, it's a very difficult decision, obviously, but I think ultimately the leadership were clearly going in a particular direction, taking the party in a particular direction, and that excluded the left from having a seat at the table. I did hope once Starmer got elected that, you know, on the basis of the 10 pledges and offering shadow cabinet position to Rebecca Long Bailey and the pleas to party unity, that there might be opportunities to influence that leadership in a particular direction. But I just don't think that that now is the case. I think that the left is basically shut out of any kind of policy making, of any degree of influence on the direction of the party. And I don't want to support or endorse that. I think that's wrong for the Labour Party. I think it's wrong for the country. And really, I think it's a decision that people have to take, you know, personal decision. I'm not going to like encourage people to leave, but my view would be that defunding the Labour Party through, you know, cancelling your subscription and forcing the party to appeal to the left in order to get your vote, rather than them taking the votes of the left for granted, would lead to a better outcome in terms of policy than just, you know, trying and failing to influence from within, which is just simply not going to happen. Their whole, like, I think their whole kind of analysis of British politics is the more that you kick the left, the more likely you are to get into government. Despite this not having worked, obviously, for successive elections.
What do you mean? We all remember brilliant Prime Minister Neil Kinnock.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think he...
His glorious two election wins that he won triumphantly both times.
This is exactly right, right? So, and even Ed Miliband, you know, to a large extent, he was controlled by the factions on the right of the party. And, you know, I like Ed Miliband as a person, whatever, but like he has said since that he wishes he was more bold about like what he, the offer that he took to the country. And yeah, like exactly as you say, Neil Kinnock is an example of where this has failed. Tony Blair, for what it's worth, was a very skilled politician, and I felt like he was able to unite most of the left around his program, his reform program in 1997. And that's because he's a skilled politician. That's because he's, you know, much better at doing the job of leader of the Labour Party than Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer's been very forthright and quite unsubtle about you know, trying to put distance between him and the left. And I think it's, I mean, look, I think it's going pretty badly for them. I mean, you look at, people point to the polls. Some things haven't changed in terms of what Labour needs to do. They need to make inroads. If they want to form a government, they need to make inroads in Scotland. They need to win back the Red Wall. And they need to hope that the Lib Dems do well enough to take seats off the Tories in the Southwest, but not too well that they start to take seats off Labour in the cities. And they're not really doing any of those things adequately to the extent that that's required. They're certainly not making inroads in Scotland. So, you know, I think the overall polling numbers don't really tell the full story. I think that Liz Truss now is going to get a bounce. I think when you've made your entire kind of opposition, you've based your entire opposition around one person, a prime minister like Boris Johnson, and then they're no longer prime minister, obviously that leaves you with a bit of a vacuum in terms of where you stand. And people don't know where the Labour Party stands in terms of their, like where they want to take the country. And that's a problem in an election, because people need to be able to trust who they're voting for, and therefore they need to have some idea of what they're voting for.
Obviously, lots of people have remained in the Labour Party on the basis that they're defending like specific MPs, like Zara Sultan is obviously going through her selection process at the moment. She's won, I think, three of the four branches. There was supposed to be a fourth one voting, I think, this week, but obviously it's not going to happen because everything's been suspended because of the Queen's death. Do you feel that that's ultimately like worthwhile, or is it more effective to, as you say, sort of build a countervailing power outside of the Labour Party that Labour has to respond to?
Yeah, exactly. I think this is why I say like it's a personal decision, and I think it has to be, you have to come to that conclusion on a case by case basis. If you're in a seat with a socialist MP that is facing reselection, obviously Zara doesn't know that she's going to, she's going to sail through, but if that's the case, then obviously, you know, it's prudent to remain a member and to sort of defend them in that constituency. Where I live, a Tory MP, he's been Tory forever, you know, that's not really on the table. I would rather, you know, donate my subs to the Labour Party, to Zara. You know, I will still support certain Labour MPs. I'll still go and campaign for certain Labour MPs. Equally, I'll campaign for Jeremy, whether he's Labour MP or not. So, like, I think that, yes, there's ways of organising within the existing political system, but I don't endorse or support automatically the Labour Party anymore, because I think the direction that it's been taken is extremely bad for the country.
I do feel a similar way about, it's like the difference between saying, because I've not personally ruled out voting for them if they offer a particularly good program, but it's a case of like my vote is not unconditional, right? As you say, it depends upon being offered certain things, you know, being treated a certain way.
Yeah, there's got to be some kind of transactional element to it, right? There's got to be some kind of, yeah, that's it. And that's the thing, like it's there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with offering policies that are going to benefit certain demographics, material interests, and then voting for you. That's like how democracy should work, really.
I saw all these people in America on the center and the right getting really, really pissed off that the Democrats, Biden, had cancelled student debt for a load of people. And somebody made a really good point, and they said, look, what would be the point of winning elections if when you have power, you don't use it to make your constituency, the people who are overwhelmingly more likely to vote for you, so college graduates, like happy? Like, you've been given power by these people, they overwhelmingly voted for you, so you want them to do it again, so you give them something, in this case gives them a bunch of money for free in effect over their lifetimes, and they were just so horrified by the idea that a government could get into power and do something for the people who elected it. And it feels as if that kind of confusion is just ever present in the minds of the Labour right. Like, how can you offer people something?
Yeah,
they should just vote for you. Like, don't they know what's good for them?
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Because the way that you benefit people who are on low incomes, and the way that you benefit people who are, you know, have to work for a living, and, you know, if they didn't get paid next month, they wouldn't be able to afford the rent and the bills. The way that you help those people is by a transfer of wealth, a physical transfer of wealth. Whereas the way that you help the ruling class or the people that are kind of much more better off, and you do it in more subtle ways, right? So, like, I don't know, for example, you roll back workers' rights, or I suppose you could say that low interest rates has helped people acquire more property for not paying very much in terms of buy-to-let mortgages, and allowing that kind of system where people can just acquire as many properties as they like, and then rent them out. That's sort of a way to help the ruling class, and that's not a transfer of wealth because they've already got wealth. That's not going to make much difference to them. So this is always the kind of response that people have when policies are enacted to improve the material conditions of people without much, because it is inevitably going to be quite an overt and blatant transfer of wealth, and people say, "Oh, that runs counterintuitive or contrary to all of what I understand about how free market capitalism is supposed to work. It's not fair." But it's not supposed to be what someone with lots considers fair. They're obviously not going to think it's fair. It's supposed to be democratic, and that's the essence of democracy, is like having an ability to offset some of the extremities of the market. And we don't have that in the Labour Party anymore. We don't have I think that what Corbyn did was anchor the discourse, anchor British politics to the left. You saw like Boris Johnson really offering a very interventionist kind of economic policy. I think at times it was more interventionist than Starmer has been. Obviously, the way they handled the pandemic with the furlough scheme and support for business and all that sort of stuff. It's extremely interventionist and not what you would consider kind of Thatcherite Tory. And they won an election with an 80-seat majority, yes, on Get Brexit Done, but also I think on investment, moving the agenda on to investment in public services and
build new hospitals.
I mean, none of this stuff happened, obviously, but this was offered and what people voted for. And that's because... And now we have a Tory party which has abandoned all of that, at least on a rhetorical level, has abandoned all like what won them the last election. And instead of identifying that and moving into that ground, which is the real new centre ground, which is the kind of vote leave sort of investment in public services, post neoliberal economic policy, pro in some sectors nationalisation of public services, all of this stuff is on the table. Instead of occupying that space, they're sort of trying to be just to the left of the Tories, which is where they are now. And I don't think that they're differentiating themselves enough from the Tories. I think that they still see the Tories as, we have to look like we would run the economy in a similar way in order to be credible. But actually, that's, again, that analysis is not really logical given what the Tories have done to the economy in the last 12 years. If you had an opposition making that argument, then they wouldn't be trying their best to kind of, be the kind of ameliorating force of the Tories, that they're trying to almost, instead of looking at how they can transform the economy and look at how they can provide an alternative vision for the country, they're just this sort of like, they want to look like they're a sort of moderating force of their overall agenda, which I think is not really, from the public's perspective, it's not clear enough.
We saw like a taste of what could have been, I think, with the energy price cap policy, because I mean, I've said this, I took some heat for this, which I understand completely, but when I was saying that I think it was one of the best policy pushes Starmer has made, because it was possibly the only time he's come out and said, I want to do something that goes not only further than the Tories, but far beyond what any of them have speculated. The Tory candidates, neither of them were talking about capping energy bills. Like, we are just going to put hard cap on energy bills and we're not going to increase it for a set period of time. And the only person saying it was Starmer. And his one was only for 6 months, and it was going to be paid in a different way. But him calling for it, I think, helped the Tories go, well, crap. We can't pretend that we can't do anything because Mr. Suit over here is calling for a price cap. So fine, we'll do the same thing. We'll go a little further. And it worked. And to me, I was like, that's good. That's what you could be doing on so many issues, and he just hasn't.
Exactly. That's the power of opposition. You can set the terms of debate, and you can force the government's hand. And I don't think they got the credit for that that they were hoping that they would get. Right. So there's two outcomes. If you're propositional in that way, there's two possible outcomes. Either the government does what you say, or the government goes further. Right. So if the government goes further than what you say, then clearly you're not going to get credit for that. If the government does what you say, or, you know, slightly modified version of what you've said, then you can get credit for that still. You can still, because it's your policy. And as long as people know it's your policy and you have pushed the government and you are like campaigning on behalf of the people to make the government do this thing that they don't want to do, then that is, you'll absolutely get credit. The problem is they were too late, first of all, in coming forward with it. And secondly, it wasn't clear or bold enough. And they could have, what they could have done, because they're saying like, oh, well, we put all the money into reducing bills. We don't want to like spend anything on nationalisation and all this stuff. That's okay. That's obviously not, you know, based in the economic reality, but they could still hold that line and say, in the short term, we want to have, you know, we want to make sure that bills are capped, but we don't want to have this situation again with energy wholesalers. So let's move towards nationalizing energy wholesalers. They could have still made that case, made that argument.
Exactly. Like I can concede that nationalizing, you cannot overnight nationalize an energy company. But if it was still maintained as a long-term objective, but instead they're arguing against it. You mentioned Corbyn before. So it's a good segue into the next question, which was, obviously, Corbynism has been, as you said at the start, like so defeated that the Labour Party is virtually an obstacle to getting anywhere close to it. Some people on the left feel that Corbynism was a distraction. A lot of people put a lot of energy for 5 years into something that ultimately went nowhere. I'm not necessarily sure I agree with that, but I know a lot of people think it. So you were closer to it than I ever was. Do you feel it was a worthwhile endeavour?
Yeah, I do. I think we learned a lot from it. I think we learned that the Labour Party establishment will never tolerate a socialist, democratic socialist leader, and will sabotage that endeavour from within. I think that's what the Ford report showed. I think that it showed that without a parliamentary Labour Party that is majority socialist, a socialist leader will struggle to command the support of their MPs, and therefore will be subject to wrecking. And I think it showed that even in spite of all of that, if you put forward a propositional, clear agenda for the country that is built around popular policies that are deliverable, you will do better in the election than people think. And, you know, we would have perhaps even done better in 2017 if we had the full support of the party. And that's a tragedy. I mean, I think the mad thing is, like, you know, the parliamentary term for the 2017 election would only have ended in June, so in this year. So
one thought I have never been able to shake is, it's hypothetical, because I'm sure Boris would have found a way to get his election anyway, but that election was called in October in 2019, the one that interrupted the parliamentary term you were talking about, hence my thought of it. If he'd never managed to get it, we would have gone into the pandemic with a hung parliament, with Corbyn as leader of the opposition. It's just absolutely wild to think, like, there are so many this is the thing, is that I think about Corbynism's time, and there are so many counterfactuals of history, mostly related to Brexit, where...
Yeah, I think if we just waved through or abstained on May's deal as well, for example, I think that would have been a game changer. But then that's where, you know, having the support of your MPs is important, because the MPs towards the end, particularly around, you know, 2018, they were subject to the whipping operation from the People's Vote campaign. You know, that was, they weren't listening to anything the leaders' office was saying. So it was extremely difficult. And and I think that's what we learned from it. And from my perspective now, I think Socialists in theory can have an influence on the Labour Party in a two-party system, but it's they're not going to have much influence under Starmer, so it's conditional. And I think that the way that socialists can have influence, the best way is through electoral reform and through proportional representation.
This actually leads me to another question, so we should go straight into that. Many people who have left Labour have pushed for the creation of a new left party, right? Which would obviously do better under PR, but some of them have started it now. You've got Breakthrough, you've had Left Unity started back up again. Even some people who are more socially conservative have joined Galloway's party. Do you think there is a realistic opening for a party to the left now, so under first past the post?
Sadly not. I mean, I know that lots of people speak about UKIP and the breakthrough that they had. The thing about Brexit was, and the thing about the European Union and the membership of the European Union was that it was basically a debate that was had among factions of capital, and therefore someone like Nigel Farage was given a lot of airtime, was given a platform, and ran in the European elections to build his profile and bankroll. And it was kind of there's no equivalent now for a left party to kind of there's no route in, there's no kind of way. And also, like, they're just not going to get the airtime, just not going to get platformed in the same way Farage was platformed.
I might, partly to play devil's advocate, partly because my opinions of being are sort of in flux at the moment, but there is some evidence to indicate that on a local level, leftist groups could do well. I mean, obviously, Aspire and Lutfi Rahman won in Tower Hamlets. Some people have said that Lutfi Rahman isn't as socialist as one might like, but it does feel to me, particularly based on his policies, that we are talking about a social democratic party because it's people who left Labour, formed their own local left-wing party, beat the Labour machine, and won. And so I don't know what you think about leftist groups working on a municipalist level, as it were.
Yeah, I have no, like, obviously, like, no objection to that. If
Oh no,
is
yeah, but in terms of
but I think, but it,
realistic.
yeah, I mean, clearly there are examples of where this has worked. And I think equally there are local authorities that are run by the Labour Party, like Preston, which run in a very left-wing way, and that's reaping the rewards in those areas. So yeah, I mean, look, I can leftists organize outside the Labour Party? I mean, there is the obvious thing about voting Green as a kind of protest, or like just this is the most left-wing party at the moment, and with a kind of profile. That, I mean, as I say, it's individual choice. It's how you feel you can have the most impact with your vote and your time. So, like, yeah, of course, it varies from area to area. I mean, in where I live, if you're going to challenge the Tories, it's Labour or the Independents, right? So, if you want, but if you, the Labour Party is quite right wing here, so there's very little in terms of kind of organising, the left wing organising, in South End, for example. But I'm sure that change that's different for different areas. And look, I think, yeah, in terms of, I would rather, like, obviously I'm doing like gambling reform stuff at the moment, and I've got business and all that stuff. But like, if I wasn't doing that, I would do electoral reform campaigning, definitely. And that's my kind of the thing I wrestle with, is like a Labour minority government, if it came with the guarantee, given it would probably rely on SNP, well, it would rely on SNP support and Lib Dem support, if it came with a guarantee of electoral reform, then that's something that I could kind of get behind. But again, that's not something that's on the table. It's not something that Starmer's like particularly keen on, right?
I have seen a lot of people getting hopeful about it being passed at conference, and I'm like, mate, even if it passes, he ain't going to do it. Like we've had this before. We've literally gone through this before. It was in the 97 manifesto and Blair didn't do it. But the only way you're going to get it, I think, is if Starmer in government is forced into doing it. Like, he's not going to do it with a majority, certainly not with a big one. But he may have to end up being forced to do it if he's reliant upon Lib Dem and SNP votes, especially if he's reliant upon Lib Dem votes.
Exactly right. Although I think SNP would support it. I mean, it's always been, they're more a Democratic Party, you know, that is the position, their position. So, but you're absolutely right. I mean, they still win outright in Scotland under PR anyway. So, I mean, they've got very little to lose. But like, I think this is where it's kind of the big thing that's changed since leaving the Labour Party for me is like, I'm not thinking about like tribally who I want to win or whatever. I'm thinking about what the best outcome would be from that, whatever the eventuality is. And like, I can't vote for a hung parliament, but that's kind of what I would vote for. And I would, you know, if I could, that's the outcome I want. And if that means, you know, that's the outcome I want if electoral reform is on the table. And I think that that's the real thing that could potentially get Starmer back a lot of support, just, you know, people lending him votes basically to sort of say, well, if he gets it, then, you know, we'll next time around be able to vote for an actually socialist party.
Do you think it's possible for people on the left to reclaim Labour within like even the next decade, or are the institutional barriers so high that our time might be better spent doing something else?
From my perspective, I wouldn't waste my time on that. My time is much better spent on things that are actually, you know, going to lead to effective and tangible outcomes, like single issue campaigns, and ideally, eventually, if there is electoral reform, organising within a new left party that can have influence in the government. There's so many things that happened since Starmer became leader that made me just sort of think, this is not something I want to support. I don't agree with it. So I don't think it's trustworthy anyway. Can they reclaim Labour? Well, no one predicted Corbyn and no one predicted the left occupying the leadership. I guess they could win a leadership contest if the rules don't change. I think that they'll do everything they can to stop the left getting back in control of the party. Even if the left did get control of the leadership, it hasn't got a majority of support in the PLP.
It's a crucial distinction you make, actually, that there is a difference between managing to win a leadership election again, which is does not have a 0% probability, and actually controlling the party, which is significantly harder and would take a significant amount of time to pull off.
Exactly. And you're basically organizing selections, you know, pushing for rule changes that ideally don't make things worse than they already are. That's what you're sort of aiming for. It's very much defensive. And unless you win those selections, which, you know, by all accounts, like, no one seems to care that the leadership just imposes candidates now. Like, it was a big problem when Corbyn did it, when we didn't have any time to run selections. But yeah, for by-elections, the leader's office can just put people wherever they like. So, you know, you're not going to win in that environment. And
what are you talking about? Paul Williams had great support in Hartlepool. Like, everybody loved him. Local lad. Everyone, like, I mean, you know, local people. I can't keep that going.
this is the thing, right? So you can't, unless you were able to win selections and a substantial number of selections, then any leader that you might be able to, in a leadership contest you might be able to win is kind of, yeah, it's moot, because you're just going to get wrecked. That's the problem. Unfortunately, it will just be a wrecking operation. They would rather, lots of them, have Tory government than have a Labour government led by a socialist. And this is, for me, the real rot at the heart of the British political system, is that you don't have democracy because you have people within a party who are so ideologically opposed to other people within their own party. How could you possibly call that a democratic choice? You're actually, I mean, perfect example, John Woodcock and Ian Austin, who became like campaigned for the Tories in the last election, and you know, former Labour MPs, both of them, and then got put in, ennobled by Boris Johnson. This is the reality, and until we have electoral reform, until we have a system where people vote for parties that are coherent and not completely unstable coalitions, you know, within themselves, then you know, I don't think the left can ever have a meaningful stake in a government.
I do agree. I think you can't have a democracy without a coherent sense of what you're choosing. And I do wonder if the UK's obsession with constituency representatives kind of gives those people an overinflated sense of their own importance.
Yeah, you could have in theory the constituency link with a proportional system. You could have like STV, the single transferable votes, where you have like county constituencies with multi members, and then you know, you'll have in Essex, we'll have a Labour MP, right, which we don't have at the moment. But we'd have a Labour MP, and I'd be able to go to my Labour MP if I had a problem. At the moment, I've got to go to James Duddridge, a Tory. He's not going to listen to me. So, like, you know, that you could still have that link, and people could actually access MPs based along political lines. I mean, there's so many things that you could do with a new system. And yeah, you're right. I think that there might be problems. The government might run into problems with the boundary review. I think that'd be a good time for Starmer to, you know, maybe shift course on electoral reform.
So the final sort of formal question would be, what would be your advice to people on a productive use of their time?
I would say find an issue that you're really passionate about that gets you up in the morning, and put your energy into single issue campaigning along those lines. That would be my advice. I mean, I think really what you want is, and what we've been able to build with the gambling reform is something that can transcend different parliaments, can transcend different governments. It's quite an effective campaigning force that is kind of at our disposal. And we're really, you know, we've built relationships with all the media, and we're able to do some quite interesting things and you know, enact pressure where it's needed and build relationships with government. And obviously, you know, conditional on a conditional basis, but you know, there are constructive conversations that take place with government and we move things forward. And you know, we have made a lot of advances. And you know, when you're involved in a political party, it's every 4 or 5 years, there's an electoral cycle. There's not much in terms of your, apart from obviously local elections, there's very little campaigning that's done in between those general elections. I think it's much better to look at this from a big picture perspective. We want socialist outcomes. And my way of trying to deliver fairer outcomes and, you know, better protections for people through gambling is to push particular reforms. And I think that we're much more likely to get socialist outcomes in other areas if we have proportional representation. So I think I'd encourage people to get involved in electoral reform campaigning. But there's so many other issues. Obviously, the climate crisis, the obvious one, right? There's massive pressure now, time pressure to move that agenda forward, and there are some great campaigns, lots of people doing excellent work, but like, yeah, that needs to happen, and it needs to happen whoever's in government. So I think taking it from that perspective, I think, is really important. Like, you know, it's, if you can get the Tories to do it, if you can get whoever's in government to do it, it doesn't matter. You know, we need to do this thing. It's and that was particularly something like as existential as climate crisis, right? So it's like having that perspective, and yeah, I mean, it took me a while to kind of detribalize myself, where I was just sort of like, okay, I'm now no longer kind of a Labour activist. I'm just an activist. I'm just a campaigner.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to that episode of Stats for Lefties. I really appreciate you taking the time to hear what we have to say. To hear the full episode, including the fun half, sign up to our Patreon at patreon.com/leftystats. And I want to give a special thanks to the following comrades who support my work on Patreon at the £5 tier. Alan Spence, Alex Wilson, Bert Rothkugel, Chloe Hopkins, Chris Gravel, Daniel Rayner, Conrad, Michael Murray, Mick McAteer, Patrick Lefebvre, Pavel Kurjamarski, Ruth Holiday, SN, Stephen Carr, Thomas Alexander, and Juditha De Silva. Thanks very much for supporting my work, guys. I really appreciate it. Have a good day.